Varys knew. No, it's not wise, it's bloody madness. I want to see her one last time before I send her away. I cannot abide having her so close.
I understand.
How could you?
Tyrion had seen her only yesterday, climbing the serpentine steps with a pail of water. He had watched as a young knight had offered to carry the heavy pail. The way she had touched his arm and smiled for him had tied Tyrion's guts into knots. They passed within inches of each other, him descending and her climbing, so close that he could smell the clean, fresh scent of her hair.
"My lord," she said to him, with a little curtsy, and he wanted to reach out and grab her and kiss her right there, but all he could do was nod stiffly and waddle on past.
"I've seen her several times," he told Varys, "but I dare not speak to her. I suspect that all my movements are being watched."
"You are wise to suspect so, my good lord."
"Who?"
He cocked his head.
"The Kettleblacks report frequently to your sweet sister."
"When I think of how much coin I paid those wretched...
Do you think there's any chance that more gold might win them away from Cersei?"
"There's always a chance, but I should not care to wager on the likelihood. They are knights now, all three, and your sister has promised them further advancement."
A wicked little titter burst from the eunuch's lips.
"And the eldest, Sir Osmond of the King's Guard, dreams of certain other favours as well. You can match the Queen, coin for coin, I have no doubt, but she has a second purse that is quite inexhaustible."
"Seven ells," thought Tyrion. "Are you suggesting that Cersei's fucking Osmond Kettleblack?"
"Oh, dear me, no, that would be dreadfully dangerous, don't you think? No, the Queen only hints. Perhaps on the morrow, or when the wedding's done, and then a smile, a whisper, a ribald jest, a breast brushing lightly across his sleeve as they pass. And yet it seems to serve. But what would a eunuch know of such things?"
The tip of his tongue ran across his lower lip like a shy pink animal.
"If I could somehow push them beyond sly fondling, arrange for father to catch them abed together."
Tyrion fingered the scab on his nose. He did not see how it could be done, but perhaps some plan would come to him later.
"Are the Kettleblacks the only ones?"
"Would they were true, my lord. I fear there are many eyes upon you. You are, shall we say, conspicuous, and not well loved. It grieves me to tell you. Janus Slint's sons would gladly inform on you to avenge their father, and our sweet Lord Petar has friends in half the brothels of King's Landing, should you be so unwise as to visit any of them. He will know at once, and your lord father soon thereafter."
"It's even worse than I feared."
"And my father? Who does he have spying on me?"
This time the eunuch laughed aloud.
"Why, me, my lord."
Tyrion laughed as well. He was not so great a fool as to trust Varys any further than he had to, but the eunuch already knew enough about Shae to get her well and thoroughly hanged.
"You will bring Shae to me through the walls, hidden from all these eyes, as you have done before."
Varys wrung his hands.
"Oh, my lord, nothing would please me more, but King Maegor wanted no rats in his own walls, if you take my meaning. He did require a means of secret egress, should he ever be trapped by his enemies, but that door does not connect with any other passages. I can steal your shay away from Lady Lolly's for a time, to be sure, but I have no way to bring her to your bedchamber without us being seen.
Then bring her somewhere else.
But where? There's no safe place.
There is, Tyrion grinned, here. It's time to put that rock-hard bed of yours to better use, I think. The eunuch's mouth opened. Then he giggled.
Lolly's tires easily these days. She's great with a child. I imagine she will be safely asleep by moonrise.
Tyrion hopped down from the chair. Moonrise, then. See that you lay in some wine and two clean cups. Varys bowed.
It shall be as my lord commands.
The rest of the day seemed to creep by as slow as a worm in molasses. Tyrion climbed to the castle library and tried to distract himself with Beldikar's history of the Roynish Wars, but he could hardly see the elephants for imagining Shay's smile. Come the afternoon, he put the book aside and called for a bath. He scrubbed himself until the water grew cool, and then had Pod even out his whiskers. His beard was a trial to him, a tangle of yellow, white, and black hairs, patchy and coarse. It was seldom less than unsightly, but it did serve to conceal some of his face, and that was all to the good. When he was as clean and pink and trimmed as he was like to get, Tyrion looked over his wardrobe and chose a pair of tight satin breeches in Lannister crimson and his best doublet, the heavy black velvet with the lion's head studs. He would have done his chain of golden hands as well, if his father hadn't stolen it while he lay dying. It was not until he was dressed that he realized the depths of his folly.
Seven hells, dwarf. Did you lose all your sense along with your nose? Anyone who sees you is going to wonder why you've put on your court clothes to visit the eunuch.
Cursing, Tyrion stripped and dressed again in simpler garb. Black woolen breeches, an old white tunic, and a faded brown leather jerkin.
It doesn't matter, he told himself as he waited for moonrise. Whatever you wear, you're still a dwarf. You'll never be as tall as that knight on the steps, him with his long, straight legs and hard stomach and wide, manly shoulders.
The moon was peeping over the castle wall when he told Podrick Payne that he was going to pay a call on Varys.
"Will you be long, my lord?"
the boy asked.
"Oh, I hope so."
With the Red Keep so crowded, Tyrion could not hope to go unnoticed. Sir Balon Swan stood guard on the door, Sir Loras Tyrell on the drawbridge. He stopped to exchange pleasantries with both of them. It was strange to see the Knight of Flowers all in white, when before he had always been as colourful as a rainbow.
"How old are you, Sir Loras?"
Tyrion asked him.
17, my lord."
17 and beautiful, and already a legend. Half the girls in the Seven Kingdoms want to bed him, and all the boys want to be him. If you will pardon my asking, sir, why would anyone choose to join the King's Guard at 17?
"Prince Aemon the Dragon Knight took his vows at 17," Sir Loras said. "And your brother Jamie was younger still."
"I know their reasons, but what are yours? The honour of serving beside such paragons as Merrin Trant and Boris Blunt?"
He gave the boy a mocking grin.
"To guard the king's life, you surrender your own. You give up your lands and titles, give up hopes of marriage, children.
House Tyrell continues through my brothers," Sir Loras said. "It is not necessary for a third son to wed or breed."
"Not necessary, but some find it pleasant. What of love?"
"When the sun has set, no candle can replace it."
"Is that from a song?"
Tyrion cocked his head, smiling.
"Yes, you are 17. I see that now."
Sir Loras tensed.
"Do you mock me?"
"A prickly lad." "No,
if I've given offence, forgive me. I had my own love once, and we had a song as well. I loved a maid as fair as summer, with sunlight in her hair. He bid Sir Loras a good evening, and went on his way. Near the kennels, a group of men-at-arms were fighting a pair of dogs. Tyrion stopped long enough to see the smaller dog tear half the face off the large one, and earned a few coarse laughs by observing that the loser now resembled Sandor Clegane. Then, hoping he had disarmed their suspicions, he proceeded to the north wall and down the short flight of steps to the eunuch's meagre abode. The door opened as he was lifting his hand to knock.
"Varys?"
Tyrion slipped inside.
"Are you there?"
A single candle lit the gloom, spicing the air with the scent of jasmine.
"My lord."
A woman sidled into the light, plump, soft, matronly, with a round pink moon of a face and heavy dark curls. Tyrion recoiled.
"Is something amiss?" she asked.
"Varys," he realized with annoyance. "For one hurried moment I thought you'd brought me lollies instead of Shay. Where is she?"
"Here, my lord."
She put her hands over his eyes from behind.
"Can you guess what I'm wearing?" "Nothing." "Oh, you're so smart,"
she pouted, snatching her hands away.
"How did you know?"
"You're very beautiful in nothing."
"Am I?" she said. "Am I truly?"
"Oh, yes."
"Then shouldn't you be fucking me instead of talking?"
"We need to rid ourselves of Lady Varys first. I am not the sort of dwarf who likes an audience."
"He's gone," Shay said.
Tyrion turned to look. It was true. The eunuch had vanished, skirts and all. "The hidden doors are here somewhere. They have to be." That was as much as he had time to think before Shay turned his head to kiss him. Her mouth was wet and hungry, and she did not even seem to see his scar or the raw scab where his nose had been. Her skin was warm silk beneath his fingers. When his thumb brushed against her left nipple, it hardened at once.
"Hurry," she urged between kisses, as his fingers went to his laces. "Oh, hurry, hurry. I want you in me, in me, in me."
He did not even have time to undress properly. Shay pulled his cock out of his breeches, then pushed him down onto the floor and climbed on top of him. She screamed as he pushed past her lips and rode him wildly, moaning, "Oh, my giant, my giant, my giant!" Every time she slammed down on him, Tyrion was so eager that he exploded on the fifth stroke. But Shay did not seem to mind. She smiled wickedly when she felt him spurting, and leaned forward to kiss the sweat from his brow.
"My giant of Lannister," she murmured. "Stay inside me, please. I like to feel you there."
So Tyrion did not move, except to put his arms around her.
"It feels so good to hold her, and to be held," he thought. "How can something this sweet be a crime worth hanging her for?"
"Shay," he said, "sweetling, this must be our last time together. The danger is too great. If my lord father should find you..."
"I like your scar," she traced it with her finger. "It makes you look very fierce and strong."
He laughed. "Very ugly, you mean?"
"My lord will never be ugly in my eyes."
She kissed the scab that covered the ragged stub of his nose.
"It's not my face that need concern you. It's my father. He does not frighten me. Will my lord give me back my jewels and silks now? I asked Varys if I could have them when you were hurt in the battle, but he wouldn't give them to me. What would have become of them if you'd died?"
"I didn't die. Here I am."
"I know," Shay wriggled atop him, smiling. "Just where you belong."
Her mouth turned pouty.
"But how long must I go on with lollies now that you're well?"
"Have you been listening?" Tyrion said. "You can stay with Lollies if you like, but it would be best if you left the city."
"I don't want to leave. You promised you'd move me into a manse again after the battle."
Her cunt gave him a little squeeze, and he started to stiffen again inside her.
"A Lannister always pays his debts," you said.
"Shay, gods be damned, stop that. Listen to me. You have to go away. The city's full of Tyrells just now, and I am closely watched. You don't understand the dangers."
"Can I come to the king's wedding feast? Lollies won't go. I told her no one's like to rape her in the king's own throne room, but she's so stupid."
When Shay rolled off, his cock slid out of her with a soft, wet sound.
"Simon says there'll be a singer's tourney and tumblers, even a fool's joust."
Tyrion had almost forgotten about Shay's thrice-damned singer. "How is it you spoke to Simon?"
"I told Lady Tender about him, and she hired him to play for Lollies. The music calms her when the baby starts to kick. Simon says there's to be a dancing bear at the feast and wines from the arbour. I've never seen a bear dance."
"They do it worse than I do." It was the singer who concerned him, not the bear. One careless word in the wrong ear and Shay would hang.
"Simon says there's to be 77 courses and 100 doves baked into a great pie," Shay gushed. "When their crust opened, they'll all burst out and fly.
After which they will roost in the rafters and rain down bird shit on the guests." Tyrion suffered such wedding pies before. The doves liked to shit on him especially, or so he had always suspected.
"Couldn't I dress in my silks and velvets and go as a lady instead of a maid servant? No one would know I wasn't."
"Everyone would know you weren't," thought Tyrion.
"Lady Tander might wonder where Lolly's bedmaid found so many jewels." "There's to be 1,000 guests, Simon says. She'd never even see me. I'd find a place in some dark corner below the salt. But whenever you got up to go to the privy, I could slip out and meet you." She cupped his cock and stroked it gently. "I won't wear any small clothes under my gown, so my lord won't even need to unlace me."
Her fingers teased him up and down.
"Or, if he liked, I could do this for him."
She took him in her mouth. Tyrion was soon ready again. This time he lasted much longer. When he finished, Shay crawled back up him and curled up naked under his arm.
"You'll let me come, won't you?"
"Shay," he groaned, "it is not safe." For a time she said nothing at all. Tyrion tried to speak of other things, but he met a wall of sullen courtesy as icy and unyielding as the wall he'd once walked in the north. "Gods be good," he thought wearily, as he watched the candle burn down and begin to gutter.
"How could I let this happen again after Tysha? Am I as great a fool as my father thinks?"
Gladly would he have given her the promise she wanted, and gladly walked her back to his own bedchamber on his arm to let her dress in the silks and velvets she loved so much. Had the choice been his, she could have sat beside him at Joffrey's wedding feast and danced with all the bears she liked. But he could not see her hang. When the candle burned out, Tyrion disentangled himself and lit another. Then he made a round of the walls, tapping on each in turn, searching for the hidden door. Shay sat with her legs drawn up and her arms wrapped around them, watching him. Finally she said,
"They're under the bed, the secret steps."
He looked at her incredulous.
"The bed? The bed is solid stone. It weighs 0.5 ton. There's a place where Varys pushes, and it floats right up. I asked him how, and he said it was magic."
"Yes," Tyrion had to grin. "A counterweight spell." Shay stood.
"I should go back. Sometimes the baby kicks and Lollies wakes and calls for me.
Varys should return shortly. He's probably listening to every word we say. Tyrion set the candle down. There was a wet spot on the front of his breeches, but in the darkness it ought to go unnoticed. He told Shae to dress and wait for the eunuch.
"I will," she promised. "You are my lion, aren't you? My giant of Lannister?"
"I am," he said. "And you're...
you're whore."
She laid a finger to his lips.
"I know. I'd be your lady, but I never can. Else you'd take me to the feast. It doesn't matter. I like being a whore for you, Tyrion. Just keep me, my lion, and keep me safe."
"I shall," he promised. "Fool. Fool." The voice inside him screamed. "Why did you say that? You came here to send her away." Instead, he kissed her once more. The walk back seemed long and lonely. Podrick Payne was asleep in his trundle bed at the foot of Tyrion's, but he woke the boy. "Bronn," he said.
"Sir Bronn?"
Pod rubbed the sleep from his eyes.
"Oh, should I get him, my lord?"
"Why, no. I woke you up so we could have a little chat about the way he dresses," said Tyrion. But his sarcasm was wasted. Pod only gaped at him in confusion until he threw up his hands and said, "Yes, get him. Bring him. Now." The lad dressed hurriedly and all but ran from the room.
"Am I really so terrifying?" Tyrion wondered, as he changed into a bedrobe and poured himself some wine.
He was on his third cup, and half the night was gone before Pod finally returned, with a sellsword knight in tow.
"I hope the boy had a damn good reason dragging me out of Shattaya's," Bronn said, as he seated himself.
"Shattaya's?" Tyrion said, annoyed.
"It's good to be a knight. No more looking for the cheaper brothels down the street," Bronn grinned. "Now it's Alayaya and Marai in the same feather bed with Sir Bronn in the middle."
Tyrion had to bite back his annoyance. Bronn had as much right to bed Alayaya as any other man. But still,
"I never touched her, much as I wanted to. But Bronn couldn't know that. He should have kept his cock out of her."
He dare not visit Shattaya's himself. If he did, Cersei would see that his father heard of it, and Yaya would suffer more than a whipping. He'd sent the girl a necklace of silver and jade and a pair of matching bracelets by way of apology. But other than that,
"This is fruitless."
"There is a singer who calls himself Simon Silvertongue," Tyrion said wearily, pushing his guilt aside. "He plays for Lady Tanda's daughter sometimes."
"What of him?"
"Kill him," he might have said. But the man had done nothing but sing a few songs, and fill Shae's sweet head with visions of doves and dancing bears.
"Find him," he said instead. "Find him before someone else does."
Arya. She was grubbing for vegetables in a dead man's garden when she heard the singing. Arya stiffened, still as stone, listening, the three stringy carrots in her hand suddenly forgotten. She thought of the Bloody Mummers and Roose Bolton's men, and a shiver of fear went down her back.
"It's not fair, not when we finally found the Trident, not when we thought we were almost safe."
Only why would the mummers be singing? The song came drifting up the river from somewhere beyond the little rise to the east.
"Off to Goldown to see the fair maid, hey-ho, hey-ho."
Arya rose, carrots dangling from her hand. It sounded like the singer was coming up the river road. Over among the cabbages, Hot Pie had heard it too, to judge by the look on his face. Gendry had gone to sleep in the shade of the burned cottage, and was past hearing anything.
I'll steal a sweet kiss with a point of my blade. Hey-ho! Hey-ho!" She thought she heard a wood-harp, too, beneath the soft rush of the river.
"Do you hear?"
Hot Pie asked in a hoarse whisper, as he hugged an armful of cabbages.
"Someone's coming!"
"Go wake Gendry," Arya told him. "Just shake him by the shoulder. Don't make a lot of noise." Gendry was easy to wake, unlike Hot Pie, who needed to be kicked and shouted at. "I'll make her my love, and we'll rest in the shade. Hey-ho! Hey-ho!" The song swelled louder with every word. Hot Pie opened his arms. The cabbages fell to the ground with soft thumps.
"We have to hide." "Where?"
The burnt cottage and its overgrown garden stood hard beside the banks of the Trident. There were a few willows growing along the river's edge and reed beds in the muddy shallows beyond, but most of the ground hereabouts was painfully open. "I knew we should never have left the woods," she thought. They'd been so hungry, though, and the garden had been too much a temptation. The bread and cheese they had stolen from Harrenhal had given out 6 days ago, back in the thick of the woods. "Take Gendry and the horses behind the cottage," she decided. There was part of one wall still standing, big enough maybe to conceal two boys and three horses. If the horses don't whinny, and that singer doesn't come poking around the garden.
"What about you?"
"I'll hide by the tree. He's probably alone. If he bothers me, I'll kill him.
Go!"
Hot Pie went, and Arya dropped her carrots and drew the stolen sword from over her shoulder. She had strapped the sheath across her back. The longsword was made for a man grown, and it bumped against the ground when she wore it on her hip. "It's too heavy, besides," she thought, missing needle the way she did every time she took this clumsy thing in her hand. But it was a sword, and she could kill with it. That was enough. Lightfoot, she moved to the big old willow that grew beside the bend in the road and went to one knee in the grass and mud, within the veil of trailing branches. "You old gods," she prayed, as the singer's voice grew louder, "you tree gods, hide me and make him go past." Then a horse whickered, and the song broke off suddenly. "He's heard," she knew. "But maybe he's alone, or if he's not, maybe they'll be as scared of us as we are of them."
"Did you hear that?" the man's voice said. "There's something behind that wall, I would say."
"Aye," replied a second voice, deeper. "What do you think it might be, Archer?"
"Two, then." Arya bit her lip. She could not see them from where she knelt, on account of the willow, but she could hear.
"A bear."
A third voice, or the first one again.
"A lot of meat on a bear," the deep voice said. "A lot of fat as well, in fall. Good to eat, if it's cooked up right." "Ah, could be a wolf, maybe a lion." "With 4 feet, you think, or two? Makes no matter, does it?" "Not so as I know. Archer, what do you mean to do with all them arrows?"
"Drop a few shafts over the wall. Whatever's hiding back there will come out quick enough. Watch and see."
"What if it's some honest man back there, though, or some poor woman with a little babe at her breast?"
"An honest man would come out and show us his face. Only an outlaw would skulk and hide."
"Aye, that's so. Go on, and loose your shafts, then."
Arya sprang to her feet.
"Don't!"
She showed them her sword. There were three, she saw. Only three. Sirio could fight more than three, and she had Hot Pie and Gendry to stand with her. Maybe. But they're boys, and these are men. They were men afoot, travel-stained and mud-specked. She knew the singer by the wood-harp he cradled against his jerkin, as a mother might cradle a babe. A small man, 50 by the look of him, he had a big mouth, a sharp nose, and thinning brown hair. His faded greens were mended here and there with old leather patches, and he wore a brace of throwing knives on his hip, and a woodman's axe slung across his back. The man beside him stood a good foot taller, and he had the look of a soldier.
A long sword and dirk hung from his studded leather belt. Rows of overlapping steel rings were sewn onto his shirt, and his head was covered by a black iron half-helm shaped like a cone. He had bad teeth and a bushy brown beard, but it was his hooded yellow cloak that drew the eye, thick and heavy, stained here with grass and there with blood, frayed along the bottom and patched with deerskin on the right shoulder. The great cloak gave the big man the look of some huge yellow bird. The last of the three was a youth, as skinny as his longbow, if not quite as tall. Red-haired and freckled, he wore a studded brigantine, high boots, fingerless leather gloves, and a quiver on his back. His arrows were fletched with grey goose feathers, and six of them stood in the ground before him like a little fence. The three men looked at her, standing there in the road with her blade in hand. Then the singer idly plucked a string.
"Boy," he said, "put up that sword now, unless you're wanting to be hurt. It's too big for you, lad, and besides, Angai here could put three shafts through you before you could hope to reach us."
"He could not," Arya said, "and I'm a girl."
"So you are," the singer bowed. "My pardons. You go on down the road. Just walk right past here, and you keep on singing so we know where you are. Go away, and leave us be, and I won't kill you."
The freckle-faced archer laughed.
"Lem, she won't kill us. Did you hear?"
"I heard,"
said Lem, the big soldier with a deep voice.
"Child," said the singer, "put up that sword, and we'll take you to a safe place and get some food in that belly. There are wolves in these parts, and lions, and worse things. No place for a little girl to be wandering alone."
"She's not alone."
Gendry rode out from behind the cottage wall, and behind him Hot Pie, leading her horse. In his chainmail shirt, with a sword in his hand, Gendry looked almost a man grown and dangerous. Hot Pie looked like Hot Pie.
"Do like she says, and leave us be," warned Gendry.
"Two and three," the singer counted. "And is that all of you? And horses, too, lovely horses. Where did you steal them?"
"They're ours." Arya watched them carefully. The singer kept distracting her with his talk, but it was the archer who was the danger.
If he should pull an arrow from the ground. "Will you give us your names, like honest men?"
the singer asked the boys.
"I'm Hot Pie," said Hot Pie at once. "Aye, and good for you," the man smiled. "It's not every day I meet a lad with such a tasty name. And what would your friends be called? Mutton Chop and Squab?"
Gendry scowled down from his saddle.
"Why should I tell you my name? I haven't heard yours."
"Well, as to that, I'm Tom of Seven Streams. But Tom Seven Strings is what they call me, or Thomas Evans. This great lout with the brown teeth is Lem, short for Lemon Cloak. It's yellow, you see, and Lem's a sour sort. And young feller, me lad over there, is Angai, or Archer, as we like to call him."
"Now who are you?"
demanded Lem, in the deep voice that Arya had heard through the branches of the willow. She was not about to give up her true name as easy as that.
"Squab, if you want," she said. "I don't care."
The big man laughed.
"A squab with a sword," he said. "Now there's something you don't often see."
"I'm the bull,"
said Gendry, taking his lead from Arya. She could not blame him for preferring bull to mutton chop. Tom Seven Strings strummed his harp.
"Hot Pie, Squab, and the bull. Escape from Lord Bolton's kitchen, did you?"
"How did you know?" Arya demanded, uneasy.
"You bear a sigil on your chest, little one."
She had forgotten that for an instant. Beneath her cloak, she still wore her fine page's doublet, with the flayed man of the Dreadfort sewn on her breast.
"Don't call me Little One."
"Why not?" said Lem. "You're little enough."
"I'm bigger than I was," I'm not a child. Children didn't kill people, and she had.
I can see that, Squab. You're none of you children, not if you were Boltons.
We never were. Hot Pie never knew when to keep quiet. We were at Hallenhall before he came, that's all.
So you're lion cubs, is that the way of it? Said Tom.
Not that either. We're nobody's men. Whose men are you? Angai, the archer said.
We're king's men.
Arya frowned. Which king?
King Robert, said Lem in his yellow cloak. That old drunk, said Gendry scornfully, is dead. Some boar killed him. Everyone knows that.
Aye, lad, said Tom Sevenstrings, and more's the pity.
He plucked a sad chord from his harp. Arya didn't think they were king's men at all. They looked more like outlaws, all tattered and ragged. They didn't even have horses to ride. King's men would have had horses. But Hot Pie piped up eagerly.
We're looking for River Run, he said. How many days' ride is it, do you know?
Arya could have killed him.
You be quiet, or I'll stuff rocks in your big stupid mouth.
River Run is a long way upstream, said Tom. A long, hungry way. Might be you'd like a hot meal before you set out. There's an inn not far ahead, kept by some friends of ours. We could share some ale and a bite of bread, instead of fighting one another.
An inn? The thought of hot food made Arya's belly rumble, but she didn't trust this Tom. Not everyone who spoke you friendly was really your friend.
It's near, you say?
2 miles upstream, said Tom. A league at most.
Gendry looked as uncertain as she felt.
What do you mean, friends? He asked wearily.
Friends? Have you forgotten what friends are?
Sharner is the innkeep's name, Tom put in. She has a sharp tongue and a fierce eye, I'll grant you that, but her heart's a good one, and she's fond of little girls.
I'm not a little girl, she said angrily. Who else is there?
You said friends.
Sharner's husband and an orphan boy they took in. They won't harm you. There's ale, if you think you're old enough. Fresh bread and maybe a bit of meat.
Tom glanced towards the cottage.
And whatever you stole from old Pate's garden besides.
We never stole, said Arya.
Are you old Pate's daughter, then? A sister? A wife? Tell me no lies, Squab. I buried old Pate myself right there under that willow tree where you were hiding, and you don't have his look.
He drew a sad sound from his harp.
We've buried many a good man this past year, but we've no wish to bury you. I swear it on my harp. Archer, show her.
The archer's hand moved quicker than Arya would have believed. His shaft went hissing past her head, within an inch of her ear, and buried itself in the trunk of the willow behind her. By then the bowman had a second arrow, notched and drawn. She'd thought she understood what Syria meant by quick as a snake and smooth as summer silk, but now she knew she hadn't. The arrow thrummed behind her like a bee.
You missed, she said.
More fool, if you think so, said Angai. They go where I send them.
That they do,
agreed Lem Lemoncloak. There were a dozen steps between the archer and the point of her sword.
We have no chance,
Arya realized, wishing she had a bow like his and the skill to use it. Glumly, she lowered her heavy longsword till the point touched the ground.
We'll come see this inn,
she conceded, trying to hide the doubt in her heart behind bold words.
You walk in front, and we'll ride behind, so we can see what you're doing.
Tom Sevenstrings bowed deeply and said,
Before, behind, it makes no matter. Come along, lads, let's show them the way. Angai, best pull up those arrows. We won't be needing them here.
Arya sheathed her sword and crossed the road to where her friends sat on their horses, keeping her distance from the three strangers.
Hot Pie, get those cabbages, she said as she vaulted into her saddle, and the carrots too.
For once he did not argue. They set off as she had wanted, walking their horses slowly down the rutted road a dozen paces behind the three on foot. But before very long, somehow, they were riding right on top of them. Tom Seven Strings walked slowly and liked to strum his wood harp as he went.
"Do you know any songs?" he asked them. "I dearly love someone to sing with, that I would. Lem can't carry a tune, and our longbow lad only knows marcher ballads, every one of them 100 verses long."
"We sing real songs in the marches," Angai said mildly. "Singing is stupid," said Arya. "Singing makes noise. We heard you a long way off. We could have killed you." Tom Smile said he did not think so.
"There are worse things than dying with a song on your lips."
"If there were wolves hereabout, we'd know it," Gras Lem. "Or lions. These are our woods."
"You never knew we were there," said Gendry.
"No, lad, you shouldn't be so certain of that," said Tom. "Sometimes a man knows more than he says."
Hot Pie shifted his seat.
"I know the song about the bear," he said. "Some of it, anyhow."
Tom ran his fingers down his strings.
"Then let's hear it, Pie Boy."
He threw back his head and sang.
"A bear there was, a bear, all black and brown and covered with hair."
Hot Pie joined in lustily, even bouncing in his saddle a little on the rhymes. Arya stared at him in astonishment. He had a good voice, and he sang well.
"He never did anything well, except bake," she thought to herself.
A small brook flowed into the Trident a little farther on. As they waded across, their singing flushed a duck from among the reeds. Angai stopped where he stood, unslung his bow, notched an arrow, and brought it down. The bird fell in the shallows not far from the bank. Lem took off his yellow cloak and waded in knee-deep to retrieve it, complaining all the while.
"Do you think Shana might have lemons down in that cellar of hers?" said Angai to Tom as they watched Lem splash around, cursing. "A Dornish girl once cooked me duck with lemons."
He sounded wistful. Tom and Hot Pie resumed their song on the other side of the brook, with the duck hanging from Lem's belt beneath his yellow cloak. Somehow the singing made the miles seem shorter. It was not very long at all, until the inn appeared before them, rising from the riverbank, where the Trident made a great bend to the north. Arya squinted at it suspiciously as they neared. It did not look like an outlaw's lair, she had to admit. It looked friendly, even homey, with its whitewashed upper story and slate roof and the smoke curling up lazy from its chimney. Stables and other outbuildings surrounded it, and there was an arbour in back, and apple trees, a small garden. The inn even had its own dock, thrusting out into the river. And,
"Gendry,"
she called, her voice low and urgent,
"they have a boat. We could sail the rest of the way up to River Run. It would be faster than riding, I think."
He looked dubious.
"Did you ever sail a boat?"
"You put up the sail," she said, "and the wind pushes it."
"What if the wind is blowing the wrong way?"
"Then there's oars to row."
"Against the current?"
Gendry frowned.
"Wouldn't that be slow? And what if the boat tips over and we fall into the water? It's not our boat anyway, it's the inn's."
"We could take it." Arya chewed her lip and said nothing. They dismounted in front of stables. There were no other horses to be seen, but Arya noticed fresh manure in many of the stalls. "One of us should watch the horses," she said, wary. Tom overheard her.
"There's no need for that, Squab. Come eat. They'll be safe enough."
"I'll stay," Gentry said, ignoring the singer. "You can come get me after you've had some food."
Nodding, Arya set off after Hot Pie and Lem. Her sword was still in its sheath across her back, and she kept a hand close to the hilt of the dagger she had stolen from Roose Bolton, in case she didn't like whatever they found within. The painted sign above the door showed a picture of some old king on his knees. Inside was the common room, where a very tall, ugly woman with a knobbly chin stood with her hands on her hips, glaring.
"Don't just stand there, boy," she snapped. "Or are you a girl? Either one, you're blocking my door. Get in or get out. Lem, what did I tell you about my floor? You're all mud."
"We shot a duck."
Lem held it out like a peace banner. The woman snatched it from his hand. "And Guy shot a duck, is that what you're meaning? Get your boots off. Are you deaf or just stupid?"
She turned away. "Husband!" she called loudly. "Get up here. The lads are back. Husband!"
Up the cellar steps came a man in a stained apron, grumbling. He was a head shorter than the woman, with a lumpy face and loose, yellowish skin that still showed the marks of some pox.
"I'm here, woman. Quit your bellowing. What is it now?"
"Hang this," she said, handing in the duck. Angai shuffled his feet. "We were thinking we might eat it, Shana, with lemons, if you had some."
"Lemons? And where would we get lemons? Does this look like dawn to you, you freckle fool? Why don't you hop out back to the lemon trees and pick us a bushel and some nice olives and pomegranates too?"
She shook a finger at him. "Now, I suppose I could cook it with Lem's cloak, if you like, but not till it's on for a few days. You'll eat rabbit, or you won't eat. Roast rabbit on a spit would be quickest, if you've got hunger. Or might be you'd like it stewed, with ale and onions."
Arya could almost taste the rabbit.
"We have no coin, but we bought some carrots and cabbages we could trade you."
"Did you now? And where would they be?"
"Hot pie, give her the cabbages," Arya said, and he did, though he approached the old woman as gingerly as if she were Rorg or Biter or Vargo Hoat. The woman gave the vegetables a close inspection, and the boy a closer one.
"Where is this hot pie?"
"Here, me, it's my name, and she's a squab."
"Not under my roof. I give my diners and my dishes different names, so as to tell them apart. Husband!"
Husband had stepped outside, but at her shout he hurried back.
"The duck's hung. What is it now, woman?"
"Wash these vegetables," she commanded. "The rest of you sit down while I start the rabbits. The boy will bring you drink."
She looked down her long nose at Arya and Hot Pie.
"I'm not in the habit of serving ale to children, but the cider's run out. There's no cows for milk, and the river water tastes of war, with all the dead men drifting downstream. If I served you a cup of soup full of dead flies, would you drink it?"
"Arry would," said Hot Pie. "I mean squab."
"So would Lem," offered Angai with a sly smile. "Never you mind about Lem," Shana said. "It's ale for all."
She swept off toward the kitchen. Angai and Tom Sevenstrings took the table near the hearth, while Lem was hanging his big yellow cloak on a peg. Hot Pie plopped down heavily on a bench at the table by the door, and Arya wedged herself in beside him. Tom unslung his harp.
"A lonely inn on a forest road," he sang slowly,
picking out a tune to go with the words.
"The innkeep's wife was plain as a toad."
"Shut up with that now, or we won't be getting no rabbit," Lem warned him. "You know how she is."
Arya leaned close to Hot Pie.
"Can you sail a boat?" she asked.
Before he could answer, a thick-set boy of 15 or 16 appeared with tankards of ale. Hot Pie took his reverently in both hands, and when he sipped, he smiled wider than Arya had ever seen him smile.
"Ale," he whispered, "and rabbit."
"Well, here's to his grace,"
Angai the archer called out cheerfully, lifting a toast.
"Seven save the king."
"All 12 of them,"
Lem Lemoncloak muttered. He drank and wiped the foam from his mouth with the back of his hand. Husband came bustling in through the front door with an apron full of washed vegetables.
"There's strange arches in the stable," he announced, as if they hadn't known.
"Aye," said Tom, setting the woodharp aside, "and better horses than the three you gave away." Husband dropped the vegetables on a table, annoyed.
"I never gave them away. I sold them for a good price and got a stiff as well. Anyways, you lot were supposed to get them back."
"I knew they were outlaws," Arya thought, listening. Her hand went under the table to touch the hilt of her dagger and make sure it was still there. "If they try to rob us, they'll be sorry."
"They never came our way," said Lem. "Well, I sent them. Ye must have been drunk or asleep."
"Us drunk?" Tom drank a long draught of ale.
"Never." "You could have taken them yourself," Lem told husband. "What, with only the boy here? I told you twice the old woman was up to Lambswold, helping that fern birth her babe, and like as not it was one of you planted the basket in the poor girl's belly." He gave Tom a sour look. "You, I'll wager, with that harp of yours, singing all them sad songs just to get poor Fern out of her small clothes."
"If a song makes a maid want to slip off her clothes and feel the good warm sun kiss her skin, why is that the singer's fault?" asked Tom. "And 'twas Angai she fancied besides." "Can I touch your bow?" I heard her ask him. "Ooh, it feels so smooth and hard. Could I give it a little pull, do you think?"
Husband snorted.
"You and Angai makes no matter which. You're as much to blame as me for them horses. They was three, you know. What can one man do against three?"
"Three," said Lem scornfully. "But one a woman and t'other in chains. You said so yourself." Husband made a face.
"A big woman dressed like a man, and the one in chains, I didn't fancy the look in his eyes."
Angai smiled over his ale. "When I don't fancy a man's eyes, I put an arrow through one." Arya remembered the shaft that had brushed by her ear. She wished she knew how to shoot arrows. Husband was not impressed.
"You be quiet when your elders are talking. Drink your ale and mind your tongue, or I'll have the old woman take a spoon to you."
"My elders talk too much, and I don't need you to tell me to drink my ale." He took a big swallow to show that it was so. Arya did the same. After days of drinking from brooks and puddles and then the muddy trident, the ale tasted as good as the little sips of wine her father used to allow her. A smell was drifting out from the kitchen that made her mouth water, but her thoughts were still of that boat.
"Sailing it will be harder than stealing it, if we wait until they're all asleep."
The serving boy reappeared with big round loaves of bread. Arya broke off a chunk hungrily and tore into it. It was hard to chew, though, sort of thick and lumpy, and burned on the bottom. Hot Pie made a face as soon as he tasted it.
"That's bad bread," he said. "It's burned, and tough besides." "It's better when there's stew to sup up," said Lem.
"No, it isn't," said Angai, "but you're less like to break your teeth."
"You can eat it or go hungry," said husband. "Do I look like some bloody baker? I'd like to see you make better."
"I could," said Hot Pie. "It's easy. You kneaded the dough too much. That's why it's so hard to chew." He took another sip of ale and began talking lovingly of breads and pies and tarts, all the things he loved. Arya rolled her eyes. Tom sat down across from her. "Squab," he said, "or Arry, or whatever your true name might be, this is for you." He placed a dirty scrap of parchment on the wooden tabletop between them. She looked at it suspiciously.
"What is it?"
"Three golden dragons. We need to buy those horses." Arya looked at him warily.
"There are horses."
"Meaning you stole them yourselves, is that it? No shame in that, girl.
War makes thieves of many honest folk.
Tom tapped the folded parchment with his finger.
I'm paying you handsome price. More than any horse is worth, if truth be told.
Hot Pie grabbed the parchment and unfolded it.
There's no gold, he complained loudly. It's only writing.
Aye, said Tom, and I'm sorry for that, but after the war we mean to make that good. You have my word as a king's man.
Arya pushed back from the table and got to her feet. You're no king's men. You're robbers.
If you'd ever met a true robber, you'd know they do not pay, not even in paper. It's not for us we take your horses, child. It's for the good of the realm, so we can get about more quickly and fight the fights that need fighting, the king's fights. Would you deny the king?
They were all watching her. The archer, Big Lem, husband, with his sallow face and shifty eyes, even Shana, who stood in the door to the kitchen, squinting. They are going to take our horses no matter what I say, she realized. We'll need to walk to River Run, unless...
We don't want paper.
Arya slapped the parchment out of Hot Pie's hand.
You can have our horses for that boat outside, but only if you show us how to work it.
Tom Sevenstrings stared at her for a moment, and then his wide, homely mouth quirked into a rueful grin. He laughed aloud. Angai joined in. And then they were all laughing. Lem, Lemoncloak, Shana, and husband, even the serving boy, who had stepped out from behind the casks with a crossbow under one arm. Arya wanted to scream at them, but instead she started to smile.
Riders!
Gentry's shout was shrill with alarm. The door burst open, and there he was.
Soldiers! He panted. Coming down the river road! A dozen of them!
Hot Pie leapt up, knocking over his tankard, but Tom and the others were unperturbed.
There's no cause for spilling good ale on my floor, said Shana. Sit back down and calm yourself, boy. There's Rabbit coming. You too, girl. Whatever harm's been done you, it's over and it's done, and you're with King's men now. We'll keep you safe as best we can.
Arya's only answer was to reach over her shoulder for her sword, but before she had it halfway drawn, Lem grabbed her wrist.
We'll have no more of that now.
He twisted her arm until her hand opened. His fingers were hard with callous and fearsomely strong.
Again, Arya thought, it's happening again, like it happened in the village with Chiswick and Raff and the mountain that rides.
They were going to steal her sword and turn her back into a mouse. A free hand closed around her tankard, and she swung it at Lem's face. The ale slushed over the rim and splashed into his eyes, and she heard his nose break and saw the spurt of blood. When he roared, his hands went to his face, and she was free.
Run!
She screamed, bolting. But Lem was on her again at once, with his long legs that made one of his steps equal to three of hers. She twisted and kicked, but he yanked her off her feet effortlessly and held her dangling while the blood ran down his face.
"Stop it, you little fool!" he shouted, shaking her back and forth. "Stop it now!"
Gendry moved to help her, until Tom Sevenstrings stepped in front of them with a dagger. By then, it was too late to flee. She could hear horses outside and the sound of men's voices. A moment later, a man came swaggering through the open door, a Tyroshi even bigger than Lem, with a great thick beard, bright green at the ends, but growing out grey. Behind came a pair of crossbowmen, helping a wounded man between them, and then others. A more ragged band Arya had never seen. But there was nothing ragged about the swords, axes, and bows they carried. One or two gave her curious glances as they entered, but no one said a word. A one-eyed man in a rusty pot-helm sniffed the air and grinned, while an archer with a head of stiff yellow hair was shouting for ale. After them came a spearman in a lion-crested helm, an older man with a limp, a bravassy sellsword, a...
Harwin,
Arya whispered.
It was.
Under the beard and the tangled hair was the face of Hullan's son,
who used to lead her pony around the yard, ride at Quinton, with John and Rob, and drink too much on feast days. He was thinner, harder somehow, and at Winterfell he'd never worn a beard, but it was him, her father's man. Harwin! Squirming, she threw herself forward, trying to wrench free